Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Authors of See You at the Campground, a guide to discovering community, connection, and a happier family in the great outdoors.
10 years ago, we bought a pop-up camper that changed our lives and introduced us to the joys of RV travel.
Join us now as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We'll also keep you dialed in with the latest RV innovations for people in the know.
Pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas, which we are dedicating to all the newbies out there, all the new RV owners, all the prospective RV owners that are listening to our podcast. So today we're going to be adapting a chapter from our book, our brand new book, See You at the Campground, A Guide to Discovering Community, Connection, and a Happier Family in the Great Outdoors. So today we're going to be looking at Chapter 5, The Campground 411. And this is a good chapter, Steph.
Well, yeah, this is, I think it's one of the more helpful chapters in our book, to be honest with you, because this is something, campgrounds, I always say to people like at RV shows when we're talking about it and stuff, like you have this innate knowledge of hierarchy in the hotel world. Right? Like, you know the difference between a Sheraton and a Marriott and a Motel 6 or whatever. It's like you just kind of know what you're going to get. And then people come into the campground space, and there are thousands of campgrounds in this country, and it is so difficult to know what the differences are if you're not kind of tuned in to the campground world.
We always say you need to learn your camping style, and we're going to help you figure that out in this podcast. And in terms of your analogy with the hotels, I think a lot of people are just, they go to a Holiday Inn or they go to a Hilton and they fit into a certain category.
Yeah, they know it works for them.
They know it works for them. And that may be the case with you eventually as a camper, but you got to figure it all out first. So we're going to break it down for you. We're going to talk about public and private campgrounds, pros and cons of different kinds of public campgrounds, pros and cons of different kinds of private campgrounds. And then we're going to end the show by giving you some of our favorites from each category. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
There are a few lessons that RVers learn quickly. Things aren't always easy. There's always some work to be done and helping hands to be shared. A little dirt never hurt, and the forecast doesn't always cooperate. But the most important thing that RVers ever learn, a bit of resilience goes a long way. So let's all lead the charge back together. RVers are built for this. Jayco is built for this. And to find out more, you can visit jayco.com/built for this for comeback-related news and advice.
And I'm excited. I've been doing some blog posts for Jayco that'll go up on that dedicated landing page, that jayco.com/built for this landing page. So hopefully you'll see those really, really soon. There might even be one up right now while you're listening to this. So Stephanie, let's dive in and talk about the two broad categories of campgrounds to help people figure out their camping style. So there's public campgrounds and there's private campgrounds. I think that most people do fit into one of those two categories. They are largely public campground campers or largely private campground campers. We have always said that we're a hybrid of both, but what are the characteristics of the type of person that might be a public campground camper?
Yeah, so a public campgrounds, just for a little bit of background, are any of those campgrounds that are supported with public funds, right? Government dollars. But those government dollars can come from a variety of different places. So you have national park campgrounds, right, that are going to be funded on a federal level. Then you have state parks that are funded on a state level. And then you have county parks. You have Corps of Engineers parks. Okay, so there's all these different types of public campgrounds. And sometimes, honestly, people don't realize how different they can be. So, you know, for example, because state parks are funded on a state level, there is a huge range of funding that goes into them. And you'll have some states that kind of have less tended campgrounds. And then you have some that will
New Jersey.
Yeah. And then you have some that will have pristine, amazing public
some
campgrounds.
Places in the South.
Yeah. South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama. We could go on and on with some states that are really doing it right with their state park system. So, you know, let's just go over though the main things you're going to get in a public campground. You're going to get more space and more natural beauty in general.
Generally speaking, and you know, like I could picture somebody out there who owns a private campground saying, well, that's not true. But I mean, think about it. A national park campground is located in a national park. I mean, there's a huge advantage there. A state park campground, the state is buying or has owned for decades that those most beautiful pieces of land.
Well, that's the point of these public lands, is they are supposed to preserve open space, right? So it's very particularly suited for that. And because of the fact that they're relying on funding, they don't necessarily need to carve out so many sites and pack so many people in order to make their numbers work. So just quite frankly, if a state park is looking at how many sites to put maybe on a row, they just aren't
profit,
looking at it dollar-wise.
The profit motive's not a huge part of that, necessarily. So people that like more space and more privacy and perhaps more trees or shade or just don't want a neighbor next to them often do gravitate towards public campgrounds.
100%. So some people, you know, you might have heard people talk about what camping really is, right?
Those are the public campground.
Those are people that generally are more comfortable in a public campground. If you have that idea from your childhood, right, of getting away from it all, of that natural beauty, of quiet and peaceful relaxation, then this is your jam. This is what you need to go find.
And you said, like, you know, broad characteristics, because it obviously varies quite a lot. And you said, you know, larger, more private sites. Also, hookups are going to be more limited. I mean, there are definitely state parks that have full hookups out there. I mean, we've researched all this stuff. But then there's also plenty of national park campgrounds that have no hookups at all.
You're going to have a wider range. With a public campground, with a private campground, you are going to have very few that are not going to offer full hookups.
I've never been to a private campground that was dry camping.
Right. But with public parks, you're going to have some that are dry camping, which just means that there are no electric, sewer, water hookups. You can fill your tank maybe coming in, and you can dump your tanks probably going out, but there's not going to be anything at your site for you. Then there's a ton that offer electric or electric and water. Like, that's like almost the most common state park feature. But the thing is, it won't be at all the sites. So what happens is a lot of people's favorite state parks, they may have 10 water and electric sites in a certain loop, or just one loop of water and electric and the rest are dry. And those sites are like prime real estate that are battled for by people who know
it's like a knife fight getting the site. Now, Stephanie, have you ever heard of a National Park Service campground with full hookups? I don't know of one in the entire country.
Shoot me an email if you know. Yeah, I couldn't mention one off the top of the head, because even the newest, like the newest one that we had ever been to, Scudic Woods, which
water
was built,
and electric.
It was water and electric
no
only.
No place to dump the septic.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense with the conservation and preservation. It's almost like a carry in, carry out idea, right? So if you have water and electric, you're holding all of your waste in your tanks. If you have sewer hookup, you're putting that sewer into a system. So that doesn't make sense for national parks in a way.
I said this episode was dedicated to the newbies, and I've actually been asked this question a lot lately. Where do you dump your tanks? I've had actually old friends of mine send me messages.
Right.
And, you know, most campgrounds are going to have a dump station. Even public campgrounds, national park campgrounds are going to have a dump station, not every single one. So if you reserve a site without sewer, that doesn't mean you can't dump your tanks at the end of the trip. You just have to conserve and monitor how much you're putting into those
tanks. Yeah, so you don't fill up and then not be able to use it. So on your way out, you'll be able to dump. Now, there are some places that you can't, that don't, for some reason. It's very few. But in those cases, what people do is they look at places like Pilot Flying J's will have the RV-friendly dump stations. And so you have to look online to find maybe a dump station near you.
So the type of people that gravitate towards public campgrounds, maybe a little bit more budget oriented.
Yeah, they're
now,
cheaper.
Let me spark
right?
a little controversy. Do you think they're less social and just want more time alone in
no,
the woods?
No, I don't think that you could not make that as an overall statement, because I know so many people that go to state parks with all of their friends. I mean, that's the thing, is it's conducive to kind of gathering, right, with a big group of your friends, because everybody can get a site. There's a big site for everybody to have fires at and, you know, just have a good time and kick back and relax. So I find that state parks are very social places. So you can be alone if you want, but you could also, we all know that everybody goes to some state and county parks to party.
All right, now let's talk. And that was our first RV trip years ago. Not that we were the ones partying.
In our local county, I mean, it's not out of control, but like large groups at our local county campground will gather on the weekends, like groups of five,
particularly
six.
On like Memorial Day, 4th of July, the last weekend they close, people get a little crazy.
And there'll be a huge tent for food. Right. Or, I mean, we've camped there with what? Seven other families?
That's true.
So, I mean,
everybody can afford it too, part of it, you know. Now let's talk about private campgrounds and the types of things you're going to find at private campgrounds and the type of people that might want to camp at private campgrounds.
Yeah.
So, what are some of those characteristics?
Well, look, people buy RVs with all of these amenities, and there's some RVers out there that just want to use all of the amenities, right?
Our friend Andy. They don't want to go dry camping.
No, she has a beautiful fifth wheel. That has air conditioning and, you know, space and lots of, and she can have her water and her electric and her fireplace running. She
outdoor
wants
shower.
To use all of the things in her RV as much as she wants to. So for them, they're like, we love private campgrounds. The end, right? Because we have this RV and we got it because it's our vacation home on wheels. So I tend to think that many people that RV more as a hotel on wheels, right? Like not like the people that used to tent camp and got sick of tent camping, so they get an RV for a more comfortable experience.
They might become the state park
people. They're more the state park people. And it takes them a while to get over themselves. And they like almost feel embarrassed that they have their RV. We have so many friends like that. Well, like they have to like be like, well, and qualify and explain their luxury. Then there's other people that are like, no. I got an RV because I basically wanted the concept of a hotel, but I wanted my own bed and my own bathroom.
I'm not apologizing for my 46-inch flat screen TV, and if it rains, I'm going to use it.
Yeah, and or if it doesn't
or if there's
rain,
a football game.
I'm telling you, if you say that one more time,
I'm condescending with the TVs.
Years.
I'm sorry.
Oh, if it rains, plenty of people watch TV when it doesn't rain.
Who
cares?
I got to be honest. For years, we woke up and put on cartoons or Andy Griffith in our RV. For years.
I don't think we were ever dishonest about that. I think we always talked about the fact that we bought a portable DVD player on the way to a campground one
I year. Have guilt now because we have two flat screen TVs in our RV. So
we do.
I have my guilt.
We do.
So private campgrounds, generally speaking, are going to have hookups. All right. I mean, they're going to probably have full hookups, and they are probably going to have more amenities and possibly activities. So you're much more likely to find a pool and a playground at a private campground. Now, some state parks do have that, but I would say it's still the exception and not the norm.
Well, I think that a lot of the state parks that have those amenities, they have them located outside the campground. So like, say, James Island, for example, in South Carolina, they actually have a climbing wall. They have a water park, but those things are not in the campground. They're part of the bigger county park. So I think that the campgrounds generally stay quieter. And then, you know, the hustle and the bustle is in other areas. Whereas at a private campground, you know, to be quite honest, many of them are very hustly and bustly. Like, it just is the nature of it. And a lot of people love that. A lot of people like the social aspect
of
it.
You're saying hi to your neighbors and people are coming by on golf carts.
You have your golf cart, right? Like, we have plenty of listeners that they have their own golf cart. They want to go to campgrounds where they can bring it and drive it around, right? So it's like, it's just a matter of the environment that you want to find yourself in.
All right, we're going to come back in a second and give some pros and cons for different types of public campgrounds and some pros and cons for different types of private campgrounds. And the goal here is to help you figure out your own camping style. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts.
Award-winning Jellystone Parks have everything your family needs to make long-lasting camping memories. Whether you are an RV enthusiast, enjoy the comforts of a cabin, or prefer tent camping, Jellystone Parks have first-rate amenities, accommodations, and activities. And with over 75 locations in the United States and Canada, you can have a quality camping experience that's also close to home.
But we are living in unusual times, and you need to take the extra step to go to jellystonepark.com, check out the Jellystone parks you might want to visit. And I cannot recommend enough giving them a call. You can't assume all amenities and activities are open right now, though they are moving in that direction. And they're also adjusting a lot of amenities. Now, Stephanie, we recently did a campground review with DJ Odom, and he went to a Jellystone in Alabama. And he said they're still doing the Yogi photos, but Yogi is photo bombing your selfie from a safe distance.
Aww,
so I was like, oh my God, that's adorable. So they are still, it is still a Jellystone Park experience, but call the Jellystone you want to visit, see if the pool is open, see if the playgrounds are open, so that you don't show up and you're disappointed in what you're getting, because they're offering a lot and they're moving towards things being open, but it's different from state to state right now.
All right, remember, it's not just a campground, it's a Jellystone Park.
All right, let's do some pros and cons of public campgrounds, right? Some of the kind of best aspects of them, some of the kind of the worst aspects of them. So what would you say are some pros and cons of state and county parks? And I kind of lumped those two together there because yeah, they're similar in feel to me.
I think one of the best things about state and county parks is usually the variety of outdoor activities that you get on site, right? Like, you don't have to go for a drive to get to a nice hike or to get to a place to kayak or fish. Oftentimes, those things are located in those state and county parks. So you're like having this kind of outdoorsy vacation right there on site.
That's a great point. We're at a private campground. You might need to sort of throw the kayaks in the truck and then drive to the lake.
Oh, it's super rare to have hiking on site at a private campground. Not that it doesn't exist, but they're usually limited at best.
I would say a huge positive aspect of state and county parks is they just tend to be budget friendly.
Yeah.
We have never spent more than $40 a night at a state or county park campground.
So, like, for example, when you're really breaking down your numbers, and since we do a variety, the contrast is always so shocking. Like, so on our South Dakota trip where we were staying in national parks, state parks, and private parks, like, we really had the overview. It was so amazing that we would stay, like, 3 nights in a national park. And then if we were going to a private campground after that, it was basically equal to one night at that private.
That's exactly right. I think
every time.
I think that, what was the campground at Badlands National Park?
Cedar Pass. Yeah.
Like, Cedar Pass was like $19 a night, yeah, or something like that. And then Rafter J was like 70.
Right. And then we were at Custer too. So it was like we were at the Jellystone in Sioux Falls. So it was just across the board. We were hopscotching between private and public. And it was like so funny that the bill always was equal to like one night at the next spot. And it really like hits at home that, look, we're willing to pay for a private campground for that, like at Rafter J, for that pool and hot tub and group fire pit. And it was amazing. But if you want to control your RVing costs, this is the number one way you're going to do it, is stay in public campgrounds.
A con for some of them and not all of them, because it really just varies by the individual campground. Stephanie referred to this before. You can go to a state or county park that maybe is not very well monitored, and people go there to party and to drink because it's so cheap to grab a site for the night, and people just want to go and have a wild time. That's not a universal experience by any stretch of the imagination in state and county parks.
That's just something you need to read reviews on. Like, yeah, to me, any public campground that is a hot spot for like the bigger groups that are going to party, that is going to be in the reviews, and you just need to do your due diligence about that.
Another con for county parks, and not always true, because you mentioned James Island County Park is in a premier location, but a lot of county parks are not necessarily near name brand destinations or places that you want to go and spend a week's vacation. They're just in their community somewhere. Okay, let's talk pros and cons of NPS campgrounds. And I almost feel like that Cedar Pass campground at Badlands had everything wrapped into one. All the most amazing things you could get on an NPS campground and some of the negatives.
I'll stay at national park campgrounds to be in some of the most beautiful locations in the entire country, regardless of the fact that your amenities are usually going to be terrible at best. So we actually did a podcast last week about the Great American Outdoors Act, right? Did I call it the right thing or the
yes.
Okay. And look, there is a backlog in federal repairs at national parks and campgrounds. See this. They are so underfunded. Many of them have been foisted off to concessionaires that run them. And there's very little oversight. for these concessionaires to make them amazing campgrounds. So you'll get something like Cedar Pass, which has the most awful bathhouses we have ever been in.
I don't think I saw a single employee walk through the campground
while we were there. No, they could care less.
The bathroom needs to be torn down.
Yeah, you're just making it through there, you know? But then on the flip side, not just being in a beautiful location, but having access to a lot of those national park just benefits like the ranger programs. Every single time we've stayed in a national park, we've engaged with that national park far more than when we're staying outside. So that would be, you know, for places like in Sleeping Bear National Dunes, Platte River Campground. You just go every night to the ranger program. You go and you float the river at the end of the day, right? You don't go in and out. You just kind of soak it all up.
The Badlands KOA is supposed to be quite nice, but I know if we had stayed there, I don't think we would have driven in to do a ranger program at night. So it's that direct access to the amphitheaters, the rangers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. Like Shenandoah, just being in the national park, you just go for a short drive on Skyland Drive, even if you've already done a hike that day or whatever. When we're staying at the Jellystone outside the park, you're going to go in, do your park activities, and then go back to the campground. So it is an immersive experience to be in national parks.
All right, so some quick pros and cons on Army Corps of Engineers campgrounds. The only real con I can think of is they don't have any kind of organized website to find them, and the websites have limited to no information on them. So I think they fly way under the radar and a lot of people don't know where they are. And they also, like, there's a lot of them in certain places in the South and there's like very few of them in the Northeast.
But then there's some in Pennsylvania that people love. This is a PR nightmare for COEs.
They just ain't trying.
But I'm a little paranoid about this being, you know, a scam, because I think that people don't want other people to know about COEs. I think that there's a little bit of a like, no,
it's
we
a
just
secret.
Won't. Yeah, we won't tell anybody. We won't really make it easy for you to come and camp here.
Because three factors that really are positives for the COE campgrounds is they often do have hookups, not necessarily full hookups, but they often have water and electric. And just about every single one of them, possibly every single one of them, is on the water.
Yeah,
that's
because
the whole
that's
point.
What they do is they manage these waterways. And so many of them have the most beautiful water views of almost any campgrounds that I've ever seen out there. These COEs, like, and they build, so they're engineers, right? It's Army Corps of Engineers. So the sites are usually incredibly level and paved. Like, they're really just designed well.
And the sites are usually gigantic.
Yeah,
huge. Yeah, they really are. All right, so we're going to come back and talk about the pros and cons of private campgrounds. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
All right, it's all about the AquaBio this season, which is a new twist on holding tank treatments. It offers today's RVers a formaldehyde and bromopol free formula.
For years, I've been saying I don't want bromopol in my holding tank treatment.
Well, you might not have, but the state of California was certainly saying that everybody had to get rid of this. And so Thetford went ahead and basically created a chemical for RVs that met the highest, strictest standards of California.
If you can make California happy, the rest of us should be happy.
Okay. So this is campground friendly. It complies with the most stringent of environmental regulations. And so it can make you feel a lot better about using these chemicals that are actually going to make sure that you keep your tanks operating. You all know how we feel. Like, I cannot tell you the number of stories we get from people who try to do every single natural alternative, whatever experience out there. I hear about stinky toilets all the time. All we've done since day one is use these pods, drop them into our toilet after we've cleaned out the tanks, and we never have stink.
And I've been in other people's RVs to try to help them with the stink, believe it or not.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
And also AquaBio, and I think almost every Thetford product made in the USA, proudly, in their Michigan factories. So another positive. So go to Thetford.com to check out more about AquaBio. All right, let's talk about some pros and cons for private campgrounds, all right? So what are some of the basic pros and cons for, say, the average family-owned campground? Not resort, but just the typical mom-and-pop campground.
I think that one of the pros that it needs to be mentioned right now at the top. It may not be my favorite one, but for this year especially, you can get reservations at these at the last minute and fairly easily, okay? Yes, some of the most popular resorts might be booked up. Some of the most amazing 10-10-10 campgrounds might be booked up. But you have to understand that because of the fact that private campgrounds are more expensive and there are more of them, you are going to be able to get a last minute spot at a private campground that you're not going to be able to get at the most popular public ones.
And you can pick up the phone and call them.
You know,
it's not so easy to pick up a phone and call a state park.
It's very hard to navigate the reservations.gov or the other different reservation sites that some of these parks have. I have a friend who said to me, earlier this week, okay, we're going to do a last minute RV trip to Northern Michigan. And it was like, where should we go? What campgrounds? And it was like, okay, well, here are the best campgrounds, but you're not going to get into them right now, right? I mean, like, that was just a given.
Yeah, you're not going to get a reservation at Platte River right now.
Right.
Yeah.
But guess what? He could get a reservation at the Mackinac KOA, which has great reviews, and it's a lovely campground.
And it puts you in a good spot.
And you're in a good spot. So that was just an example this week of a private campground that is just going to be available for a last minute booking that a public campground isn't.
All right. In general, too, you're going to get more in the way of hookups. You're not going to see dry camping. And you're going to get more in the way of amenities and activities. You're going to see pools. You're going to see playgrounds. This is a trickier summer for some of those things. But there's certainly going to be more available at a family-owned campground. Now, specifically, a couple different kinds. Let's talk KOA. There's over 500 KOAs in the country. What are some of the pros and cons of KOA campgrounds?
Well, look, KOA has the customer experience mostly dialed in. So they understand and really try to reach out to new campers and also RVers that just want more of that, like almost hotel-like experience. Easy check-in and check-out process. Somebody guiding you to your site and helping you back in. Delivering firewood to your site.
You know what you're going to get. You know what the level of service is going to be.
There's a dog park. You just know there's certain things. Now, here's the tricky part for new people. What new people don't understand is the variety of amenities available at KOAs. They all have a certain level of customer service, and they all have certain policies about reservations and cancellations, but there's a huge range. Some are simple little campgrounds off the side of the road, which they call Journey.
They're trying to designate those as Journeys. They're good for overnights.
Some are resorts that have food service and activities running all day and water slides. So the problem I think that new campers need to understand is that you have to look at the individual KOA. KOA does a great job on their website. So you can go and you can search for the KOA. You have to look at that one to see what they have.
Yeah, and most of them are either the Journey designation, which are good for a quick overnight stop, the Holiday designation, which is like a base camp for exploring a region, or as Stephanie mentioned, the Resort KOA, which is going to have all the goodies there. Now, pros and cons of Jellystone campgrounds. Jellystones are great for families. I mean, Jellystones are packed with amenities, packed with activities. They're making adjustments even in the summer of coronavirus. And if you're traveling with kids, and I would say kids of any age, a Jellystone's going to make a really fun option.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, some people get like, let's talk about like the sticker shock, right? People are like, oh my gosh, this is so expensive compared to a camping experience. Well, what do the Jellystones say? They say, it's not your average camping experience, right? I have friends that understand that this is actually like the most affordable family vacation that they can take. So like I introduced a friend of mine to the Jellystone experience about 2 years ago, I think. They now go to the Quarryville or one of the other Jellystones in our area.
And they just stay there for
multiple times a week for a week vacation with all the cousins because she's like, we can do this and all of the activities are included. All of the pool, all this stuff. And she's like, at the end of the day, what we pay for a week's vacation with 8 kids, you know, she's like, it's so affordable.
And there are some Jellystones, like say Jellystone Luray, where we're going to go into Shenandoah National Park and hike, or the Jellystone Lazy River in New York, where we're going to go into some of the beautiful state parks and maybe do some kayaking. But then there are other Jellystones like Quarryville, where you're just going there and staying there. Now, in terms of a con, if you want a quiet, peaceful, relaxing camping trip without a lot of kids around, you want to enjoy the peace and the quiet of nature in the woods.
Not the place for you.
Probably not the place for you.
This is like family camp. This needs to, you need to like look at this camp. As summer camp with for Yogi. The family. Yeah, with Yogi and his friends. Okay, this is not a peaceful, natural retreat. So you have to go looking for the thing that they're really good at. If you go looking for nature and quiet and bird song, that's go not going to happen.
Yeah, go to you're going to get kids song.
Yeah, kids it's song. A lot of kids song. Yeah,
another. Place to look at are Sun RV resorts. There's like a really lot of nice Sun RV resorts.
We
in the country.
Had a seasonal site at one year
at Lake and Wood, yeah. And a lot of them are focused on seasonal campers, and that a lot of their campgrounds don't have a lot of sites for transients, but they tend to be very clean, have very nice pools, et cetera, et cetera. And Sun even owns some Jellystones, and I think even some KOAs to this date. So Sun is kind of all over the place.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
You might want to look into them. And then just in general, resort camping is so on trend right now. And it takes a certain type of person to want to do the resort camping, because you're going to pay $80, $90, $100, $120 a night, but you're going to get walk-up bars. You're going to have yoga classes in the morning. You're going to have all kinds of bike tracks and organized activities for the kids and volleyball and basketball.
And let's just point out that there's resorts for every type of RVer in terms of, like, there's resorts that are very kid-focused, like a place like a Jellystone Luray or something. There's resorts that are more adult-focused, like the Carolina Pines. We just got an email from them recently, and so they're in my mind, you know, and that is more of an adult resort feel to it, with really beautiful pool and hot tub.
That's a great point. So there's resorts for families, there's resorts for couples.
And then there's ones that combine, like you have your Normandy Farms or Lake Massey's George, Landing. Which are these older school RV resorts that have something for everyone. They have activities for adults, on-site restaurants, but then also a lot of kid-friendly stuff. So there's a range within that too.
Let's share some of our personal favorites in a few categories. So favorite state parks. We love Camden Hills State Park in Maine. Maine has a great state park campground system. We love Watkins Glen State Park in New York, and New York has a great state park system. We love Letchworth State Park, also in New York. Nickerson State Park in Massachusetts on Cape Cod is gorgeous. Those are some of our favorites for state parks.
And then for national park campgrounds, we already mentioned the Platte River Campground in Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore. We also mentioned Cedar Pass in the Badlands, and then Scudic Woods Campground up in Acadia National Park.
Now, in terms of Army Corps of Engineers campgrounds, our correspondent Carrie Cox loves Old Highway 86 in Missouri. She's reviewed that.
It was like one of her first campground reviews for
us. Yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes. And then also we've had Casita Dean Mayon.
He's an expert. Did
a whole episode on Army Corps of Engineers campgrounds and listed some of his favorites. We will link to that in the show notes for the RV at the RVAtlas.com. So a couple of my favorite KOAs that we love so much, the Bar Harbor KOA, the Cape Hatteras KOA. I love the Redwoods KOA.
And then for the Jellystones, I have to say we had a really fun Jellystone experience in Texas. Everything is bigger in Texas, and Texas does those Jellystones right. So there's a few. You can dig around in our website for those. And then also the Luray, Jellystone.
Lazy River.
Lazy River.
Jellystone Mill Run out near Pittsburgh was fantastic. Loved that one.
Super total fun favorite. Time.
And the Jellystone, like the Jellystone Lazy River in New York, is great. Lots
yeah,
of
but
good
you know
ones
what?
Around.
I love the Jellystone in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, yeah. Because I thought that was an example of that really nice Jellystone that's not all like water park and everything. It was just
sort
a really
mid-sized.
Pretty.
Yeah.
Nice, peaceful campground with the bounce pillow and the Gaga ball and the basketball court. Like the kids could just go off and play and we could relax.
So just a reminder to everybody that this podcast was adapted from our book, See You at the Campground, from Chapter 5, The Campground 411. So if you want even more great information about starting out as a camping family or an RVing family, check out our book, See You at the Campground, A Guide to Discovering Community, Connection, and a Happier Family in the Great Outdoors, which was released right at the beginning of a global health pandemic. But we are doing well with it, and we're getting all kinds of nice messages and reviews, and we really appreciate everybody that bought a copy, and hope you do too, to be quite honest. So we'll see y'all at the campground.
See you at the campground. A big thank you for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas.
And a big thank you to our sponsors, Jayco, Thetford, Cabela's, Jellystone, and Go RVing. They provide great quality products and resources for RVers and also support the production of this show. We personally believe in them and are happy to share our favorite products with you.
You can find blog posts and links with everything mentioned in this episode over at thervatlas.com.
And you can join the friendliest group of RVers over on Facebook in our private RV Atlas group.
And as always, we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.